I want to start with a question. What would you do? What calling would you fulfill? What purpose would you go after if conditions in your life were perfect? What good would you do if you had these unlimited resources? If there were no issues physically, that your genetics were just awesome, that you had total freedom, you'd have a boss, could do what you want when you want, what would you do? What would be that thing out there? You go, I'd do it tomorrow. I know I would do good in the world. I would make a difference. I would be fulfilling purpose. Think about that. While you do, finish this phrase. I would if I could, but I can't. Both of you got that. That's fantastic. I would if I could, but I can't, so I won't. I would if I could, but I can't, so I won't. And that can often be the default response that we have when there's this next step of obedience in following Jesus. Well, I would if I could, but I can't, so I won't. If the person next to you turned and said, would you buy me a new car today? You might turn and say, well, I would if I could, but I can't, so I won't. Chuck Swindoll, pastor, author, all-around good guy, said this, if you cannot do the good that you would, do the good that you can. Calling is clarified when I obey what God is asking me to do next or now. If I hold back, step back, things don't get clearer. They tend to get cloudier. What's your next step? What is it that is still left on the plate of obedience in your life that you have not walked into yet? Your calling is about who you are and who you're becoming, not what you do. And today, here's our statement we're going to spin off of that, and it's this. It's not what you would, it's what you can. It's not what you would, it's what you can. It's not what you would if you could. It's what you can. And it starts where you are, on the job that you're on, in the marriage that you're in, with the kids that you got. So I want to take a moment here and talk a little bit about what calling is and is not. Many surveys have been done over the last few years that point to the fact that the vast majority of people have a similar question. And it isn't limited to whether you're a Christ follower or not, but the question is this, what's my purpose? What's my purpose? What's this all about? And then if you are a Christ follower, there's sort of variations on that question, things like, how can I know what decisions God is asking me to make? And how do I know where God starts and I stop and God starts? And how do I know the difference between my will and God's will? How do I sort all of this out? Now, we're going to walk through this now, and I really wanted to ask you to write these things down, to use that outline, because it's important, because at some point you're going to have a big decision to make in your life. And you're not going to have written it down. You're going to ask your wife, what was it that preacher said? And she's not going to remember. And then you're going to go ahead and make a decision, and you're going to make a bad one, and you're going to go to prison. And so it's really important that you write these down. Number one, calling is active, not passive. Calling is active, not passive. Well, once you realize that you have a calling, don't outsource your participation in that calling. Don't look beyond. Matter of fact, today in this auditorium, in West Auditorium, at any campus, online, it's very easy to hear some of the things that you hear, but then just kind of let it slide on by. Well, that's not for me. I don't need to do that. Or, that's something to consider, but not actually ever do. You see, we can take this idea of some of the things we've already heard in this series. Well, it's not about achieving, it's about receiving. And it's not a competition. I don't have to worry about this. Matter of fact, I'm going to sleep in. And you're sort of just, hey, you know what? God's got this. I don't see that I can play much of a part anyway, so I'm going to let this slide on by. There is a direct connection between calling and doing. It's active, not passive. And you might think, well, can I really do this? Is this for me? Well, let me tell you right now, what God has for you is for you. And hell can't stop it from happening. You can. And that sixth grade teacher who said that to you, that hurt you, that still rings in your memory, they don't get to have any say in your calling and what God has for you. And your dad who walked out or your spouse who left, they don't determine your call. And even the dumb decisions that you've made or the things that have happened to you, they don't determine whether you can walk in the center of God's will and calling from this moment forward. That's about you, and that's about your choices. God can use all of the hell that I've been through. God didn't necessarily author all those things, but he can use them. See, I am called to run in a lane that he has assigned me, in a race that's been marked out for me. It's mine. But while it creates kind of a sense of relief, there should also be some sense of a responsibility that the choices and decisions I make on what's next have everything to do with where I'm going to end up. What's your next step? I want to read a few verses from the Old Testament about a guy named Gideon. And I really love Gideon in the Old Testament because I see myself in him, and it gives me hope. And perhaps you'll spot you in here as well. Judges 6:11. The angel of the Lord came and sat down under the oak in Ophrah. I'm just going to keep going. And under the oak in Ophrah that belonged to Joash the Abiezrite, where his son Gideon was threshing wheat in a wine press to keep it from the Midianites. The Midianites were just one of the nations that had current run of Israel. And it was a very difficult time for the people of Israel. They were having to hide and live in caves, and everything that they had was being taken. And so you've got Gideon who's threshing the wheat, which is done in open air so the wind can catch the chaff, and it all goes, not that I don't do a lot of wheat threshing, but I have read a couple things about it. Well, he is in a wine press, which is essentially a depression, a hole, and he's threshing the wheat there because he's hiding, because it's dangerous, and he doesn't want to lose the wheat to the Midianites. Now, verse 12, when the angel of the Lord appeared to Gideon, he said, "The Lord is with you, mighty warrior." Hiding in the hole. The Lord is with you, mighty warrior. That would make sense if he was standing on a mountaintop threshing the wheat. Come on, Midian. I'm not afraid of you. But he's not. You see, God sees something in Gideon that Gideon doesn't see in himself. And God sees something in you and me that we often don't see in ourselves. Verse 13, notice all the different qualifying words that Gideon uses in his acceptance speech here. "Pardon me, my Lord," Gideon replied, "but if the Lord is with us, why has all this happened to us? Where are all his wonders that our fathers told us about when they said, 'Did not the Lord bring us up out of Egypt?' But now the Lord has abandoned us and given us into the hand of Midian." The Lord turned to him and said, "Go in the strength you have and save Israel out of Midian's hand. Am I not sending you?" It's like, wait a minute. If the Lord's with us, why? Why? How come all the bad stuff's happening to us? Why is it? I mean, I heard that he does all these wonders, that he can heal, but he didn't heal my friend or my parent. And that he's a great provider and we can trust him, but I'm broke. What's this all about? And I love the fact that, you know, here's Gideon gives God a complaint. God gives Gideon a command. And he doesn't even refute Gideon's complaints. He just sort of passes right on by him. Why? Well, because he's God and he doesn't have to explain himself. He's the Lord Almighty. And I've heard people say, and I've said it myself,
well, when I get to heaven, I've got a couple of questions for God.
When I get to heaven, I'm not going to get in God's face. I'm going to fall on my face because he is God and I am not. And the only question I'm going to have is, how did I get in? This is awesome. And you will too. Verse 15, pardon me, Lord, Gideon replied, but how can I save Israel? My clan is the weakest in Manasseh, and I am the least in my family. And the Lord answered, I will be with you, and you will strike down all the Midianites together. Calling is never going to be clarified through your questions or through your whining. I still have a lot of questions that I have that I don't have clarity on yet. A lot of whys. But that doesn't mean I don't keep stepping forward. And God may never answer in this lifetime all the questions you've got. But are you going to just keep your life in neutral until he answers you because of who you are, you deserve an answer. I mean, who does God think he is? What happens when we get stuck there is we end up in hiding. And we end up bitter. And it's misdirected. Or we're just waiting. We're waiting, you know, we're going to step forward, but we're waiting for perfect conditions. Or a sign from God. Active participation isn't about having the best of everything. It's about making the most of everything you have. He said, go in the strength you have. He didn't say go to Gold's Gym for a year. Go in the strength that you have. Mother Teresa put it this way, it is not always possible in this life to do great things, but we can always do small things with great love. So, are you actively cooperating with the Holy Spirit in your life? Are you taking the next step? Gaining some clarity? Or are you passively waiting? Well, who am I? I mean, my tribe's the least of all of them. And I'm the runt of the litter in my family. No one takes me seriously. Who am I? How could God use me? Well, I would if I could, but I can't, so I won't. Number two, calling is ours, not only mine. It's plural, not just a singular thing. As you read through this story, which I hope you'll do this week, look at the whole story. It's a wonderful story. What you'll see is that God never intended for Gideon to do this alone. That he would call others to come alongside. And that he would do a great miracle. Matter of fact, if you don't have a Bible with a modern translation, we would love to give you a Bible today. Any campus, you can just go to one of the info centers and we'll give you a Bible. And so please grab one if you don't have one that's legible, or it's like giant with all of the family births in it and stuff. Grab one of these. You can write in it. You can make notes to yourself. It's great. So we'd love to give you that. It's not just about you, though. your calling, although it's yours, is not just about you. So keep stepping into community. Keep moving toward relationships that are going to encourage you, challenge you, and help you. Whether that's ministry teams or growth groups. You know, we're going to open up those signups for growth groups today. Don't take a pass. Keep stepping in to community. So, are you trying to follow Jesus alone? Number three, calling is now, not later. We tend to think of calling in terms of what I will do one day. Well, one day. And we're sort of keep putting it out there that, well, when this occurs and that happens and it all gets lined up. But you know, what I have found is I might have an idea of, you know, where I'd like to go. But often, as I'm moving, I end up in a different place that's frankly wonderful, but it doesn't necessarily end up where I thought. Calling is a lot like that. Don't wait for this ultimate calling. Start walking it out today. How? Take your next step of obedience. It's not about a position. It's not about some great thing you will do. It's about doing the next thing. What's God saying? What's your step of obedience that He's calling you into? Go in the strength that you have. Because when you offer God a little bit, He can do a lot. But anything multiplied by zero is still zero. You see, that's your part. That's the active part that's on you. A few years ago, I was in a growth group with a few guys, and we met on morning, had a breakfast, and just talked through that weekend's message and kind of the big idea, what are we learning? And we also, you know, talked about family stuff and career stuff. And one of these guys was just starting a new business. He had a big idea and no resources. But he, you know, was passionate about what he was doing, felt like this was going to be a great next step. And he would say, I need you to pray because here's sort of the next watermark that we need to get to. And there were these incremental steps, and we prayed along with him. And that was a few years ago. And his business went like this. It was just a steady line up in the graph. Not a spike, but just kept going. And you know, one of the things that I saw in my friend is that along the way, he was always just taking his next right step. He was consistently saying yes to Jesus with his time, his talent, and his treasure. He didn't say, well, when the business gets to here, then I'm going to be awesome because I'll have the help that I need, I'll have more time, I'll have the resources to be generous, all of these things. He did what he could in the present. And today, his company is wildly successful, but he's no different. He's still just doing one day at a time what Jesus is asking him to do. Very simply. God is calling you to follow him in the present, in the now, right now, on the job you have, in the circumstances you're facing, in the jacked up relationships, all of it, today. Obey today. You know, with what I have and who I am, not what I wish I had and who I wish I was. Today, Psalms 84. Blessed are those whose strength is in you, who have set their hearts on pilgrimage. As they pass through the valley of Baca, they make it a place of springs. The autumn rains also cover it with pools. This valley of Baca was a pass that people that were on a pilgrimage to Jerusalem, they had to go through. And it was a difficult place. It was barren. It was brutally hot. Water supply was uncertain. There were bandits. It was dangerous. And this place they had to get through. And the name itself, Valley of Baca, means Valley of Tears. Valley of difficulty. And these people that are on pilgrimage. Blessed are those whose strength is in you, who have set their hearts on pilgrimage. Even when you're going to go through the tough times, keep going. It's a process, not a project. Don't stop. Don't quit. Don't back away because things are getting difficult. And in that place, God will show up for you. God will show up for you. But don't be deterred. Do not disconnect. Keep taking your next right step. You know, I'm not where I want to be, but I'm also not where I used to be. Keep making progress. God tells Gideon to go in the strength you have. Be faithful on the budget that you have. Do what you're doing with the brains that you have. In the marriage that you have. With the kids that you have. Exercise with the body that you have. Go in the strength that you have. So even if I'm broke, I'm called. And even if I'm discouraged and doubting, I'm called. And even if I'm wildly successful, I'm called. See, it's about the present. Whether my present circumstances are awesome or awful, I'm called. Keep taking that next right step.
My grandfather was the person that really kind of helped me catch this as a young person. Shout out to anybody that was in the military. You have some people in the military on Memorial Day. And thanks for everything that you've done or people you know has done. My grandpa, who I lived with when I was growing up, he was a bomber radio man. So he's on one of the bomber crews in World War II. He was the guy that ran the radio. And one of his favorite things to do is tell me stories. And so he was the person in my life that sort of made sure I kept moving and got the different things done and kept moving in life. And one of the ways he would do is he would tell me these stories. So if there was something I was supposed to do, supposed to rake up the leaves, I didn't get it done, it always came with a story. And one time my grandfather told me a story that he, as a radio person, he had on this bomber, he had like a little place that he would, you know, do the radio. And back, it was Morse code back in those days. And they would fly over Germany, and they were flying into the areas where they would drop these bombs. So pretty dangerous. They'd shoot flak up at the planes. And he said that sometimes you'd come over, you'd see a hole in the bottom of the plane and a hole in the top, and a shell had gone right through. So this was like real stuff. And it wasn't insulated then, so they had to have the oxygen on and the warm suits. And they were flying over this one pretty dangerous area where they're going to drop a bomb. And when they opened up the bomb chute to drop it, the bomb wouldn't release. So I mean, he's like, you know, he's telling me, it's like the movies. You see the movies, it's like, well, how are they going to land? There's this bomb there. So the captain radios back to one of the gunner guys because they had different people that would be on the machine guns, which kind of, you know, be a cool place to be if you're in the Air Force, and said, hey, we got to get that bomb off there. So one of his buddies, he's watching it now. He's radioing saying, you know, we got big problems here. We got this bomb on this plane. And one of his buddies, because they're tight. One of the things Mike was saying in there is you can't do Christianity alone. It's not just Christianity, life alone. And what they would encourage on these aircrafts is it was a tight, tight team. And so they knew each other well. They lived each other. They went out together. So one of his buddies now, he has to come over, open pit now, see right down through, has to try to somehow kick this bomb loose over this area. So he goes over, and it's opened up. And, you know, everybody's very, very aware of what's going to happen. And they only have enough gas to just get there and get back. So they can't really play around much with what's going to happen. And he goes over, and I guess what had happened is he couldn't see well or something, and so he instantly took his oxygen mask off and started kicking at this bomb, and he didn't realize that the altitude, he just sort of lost his mind, that he wasn't going to be able to breathe. And my grandfather was over doing the Morse code, and he looked over and he saw him rip his mask off like that, and he realized right away, whoa, he's going to pass out. And here was the scene that happened. He's kicking, he's trying to get this thing loose on this bomb, and just as he did, he gets the thing loose, the bomb goes away, he slumps over against the side of the plane. My grandfather sees the whole thing. He gets up, he runs over, he slumps over, he's just about ready to fall out this hole, and my grandfather grabbed him by his harness and pulled him over. And you know, a little kid, I'm like, wow, okay, you know, amazing, you know. And he would always tell me, he says, and Robin, that was just one of many times that something dramatic had to happen so the mission would get accomplished. And you know, when my grandfather would tell me those stories, he was well into his late 60s and 70s, and I could tell that in his life now, later, when he'd become an insurance salesman, and the life's to-do lists at times had gotten the best of him. When he looked back on his life, even though it was dangerous, even there was lots of those perilous moments, the best time in his life is when he was on those missions. When there was something bigger to accomplish, when there was something greater going on in his life. And what Mike's saying today is that when life just becomes another day of to-do lists, I hit the goal again, the kids didn't break anything, I made it to work on time. When that's all it is, when I can't catch that, you know, God, you have something bigger planned for me. There's something greater planned for me. I'm a part of something that you've designed for me, God. It just gets very bland.